WIOX is supported by Grand Gorge Tire, family-owned and operated, and ready to serve your needs for new and used tires, including mounting, balancing, and anti-corrosive lubricant. Walk-in service welcomed Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5. Grand Gorge Tire, Route 23, between Grand Gorge and Stamford, 607-588-4100. WIOX is supported by Music on the Delaware, presenting a socially distanced party with vocalist Kimberly Hawkey, Lauren Daniels on piano, and Evan Jekylls on bass. It's called Upbeat Music for the Times We're In, a live concert on Zoom from the Walton Theater, Saturday evening, October 24th at 7:30. Music, requests, questions and answers, and all that party Zooming. More information at waltontheater.org or 607-865-6829. 607-865-6829.
Hi, I'm John Madio, host of the Little Delaware Jamboree, an Americana music show, Monday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. here on WIOX Roxbury. We are community radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXradio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. If you like what you hear, you can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good. Today is a great fall day.
It really is. I mean, even the American beech trees, which usually turn kind of brown, are golden yellow.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, no, the color is, I think Monday might have been the peak of the peak.
Yeah.
They were beautiful.
It is. I mean, the American beech and yellow birch are giving sugar maple a run for the golden color this year, and red maples are turning an awesome red, of course. Yep. And even the oaks, the red oaks are just a brilliant red as well.
Awesome.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool year for that. What have you been out seeing in the woods?
Well, I took the bow for a walk in the woods the other day just to get out and went up a tree, and the only thing I saw were porcupines.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're walking all around me, you
what
know?
The heck?
One went up the hill. Okay, you know, and sounded like a deer because, you know, you're not used to hearing porcupines. I turn around to him. He's going up the hill. And 5 minutes later, I don't know what happened, but he turns around and walks back down. I'm like, what are you doing, man? So,
know.
Yeah, a lot of porcupines out there.
Okay. I found some cool. Found some hen of the woods, and I was hunting an oak stand this weekend, and saw a lot of deer. But walking out, I found hen of the woods mushroom flushed all over around this one oak tree. There must have been, I don't know how many pounds, 20, 30 pounds of it all over the place.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen many mushrooms this year, but wasn't really looking for them either. Other than that, I don't know. I've just been cutting trees down here and there. But for different people, cutting a lot of white pine trees down. A lot of white pine trees are dying out throughout the Catskills, aging out. Not doing so well with the rain and stuff, but near people's homes and stuff.
Nice.
But tonight we got a full show. We're having Dr. Hugh Canham from the College of Environmental Science and Forestry over there in Syracuse, where I went to school, talk about the importance of family forests in the New York economy. Dr. Canham is professor emeritus at SUNY ESF, where he taught and conducted research in forest and resource economics for over 30 years. He has done extensive research in forest land ownership, regional economic impacts, forest taxation, and New York forestry. His teachings embrace land use economics, the economics of non-market goods, and integrated forest management. He has served as consultant to the New York State DEC, Northern Forest Lands Council, Tug Hill Commission, United States Department of Ag, and New York City Catskill Watershed Agricultural Council. He is the author of 5 articles in the Encyclopedia of New York, several entries in the Encyclopedia of American Forest and Conservation History, and published a history of the 100-year-old Empire State Forest Products Association. Dr. Canham received all his degrees at the State University of New York, ESF, 1960, Master's 1962, and 1971 in economics. But let me see if I can get him on. Hugh, are you there?
I am right here, yes.
Is there anything I missed out? You've done a lot, you know?
Well, I guess they sometimes say the longer the introduction, the less famous, but no, I think you got it. You got it right there. I might add, I was born on Staten Island, and when I was a teenager, we moved up to a dairy farm on a hill. It was one of the hill farms in Otsego County, and I sure learned a lot of things about forestry there, as well as when I was in college.
It's kind of unusual, from Staten Island to Otsego County. That's quite a move.
Yeah, well, my folks always, on Staten Island we had all kinds of animals and garden, and they kind of thought they'd like to get into farming. And we got into it about the time that the big technological revolution came through in farming. My dad was an accountant, and he calculated back in 1954 that if you had 20 dairy cows, you could do quite well on a farm. And by the time he and my mom retired, which was about the time I got married in 1963, yeah, about 9 years later, the break-even number of cows gone up to about 100.
Wow.
Wow. No kidding. And you see that in the woods today, right? That put a lot of farms out of business and made some forest.
Yeah, that was. In fact, I I wrote an article, one of the articles that I have, I called Milk Cans and Forestry. And I said that one of the things that led to the increase in forest land in New York in the end of the 20th century was the development of the bulk milk tank. Mm. Because when you have a bulk milk tank, you need, first of all, plenty of cows to keep the tank to justify all that investment. Second of all, you need a darn good road to get the tank truck up. You can't do with just these old dirt roads that we had in the 1950s. And that led to a lot of farms, hill farms, going out of business and the farmers concentrating on the bottomlands. So it did lead to some significant changes. And you're right, we all of a sudden we had a lot of overgrown pastures, a lot of nice young wildlife habitat, actually, in these fields that were reverting back to a forest.
Yeah, big changes out there in the last 100 years from fields, yeah. Fields to forests. I would say probably the most phenomenal change in environmental history.
Yeah, there aren't too many areas in the world that have undergone what happened here in the Northeast United States, and in very much so in New York State. Back in around 1910, 1920, it was only about 20% of New York State in forests and woods. The rest of it was all cleared for farming, primarily. And now we've got two-thirds, 65% of New York State is forested. Forests are the most widespread cover across the entire state.
And why do you think they're important? Why are forests important in New York?
Forests are really important everywhere that they occur. But here in New York, we've got some unique circumstances. Of course, thinking one of the things that comes to mind when you think about the Catskills is protecting the watershed of New York City. But it's not just New York City that depends on forested watersheds. Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, Oneonta, Binghamton, when I lived in Herkimer, we had a nice watershed there that was covered with trees. So we have, we need to protect the watersheds because most of them are tree-covered, forested. And one of the ways you can do that is through careful forest management. Of course, the other big thing that always comes up is we have a thriving wood products industry here in New York State. We produce lumber. Once, in fact, in the middle 1800s, there was more lumber shipped out of the port of Albany, New York, than any other place in the country. At that time, it was mainly softwoods coming out of the Adirondacks. But today, we still have quite a lot of timber harvesting going on, and we support a very good wood-using industry. It ranks among the top 10 manufacturing sectors in the state and provides employment for a lot of people. And also, one of the things that the timber harvesting does, it allows landowners to pursue some of their other interests. In fact, the New York Forest Owners Association that I'm involved with has just signed an agreement with New York Audubon and several other groups to provide some forest management advice to landowners in the upper Delaware watershed in New York and also in Pennsylvania to improve bird habitat. And the way, of course, you can do that is through timber harvest and creating some little patch openings or creating young cover or edge cover, depending on the species of bird. So the Audubon Society is going to be cooperating with the Forest Owners Association, and I believe Catskill Forest Association will be involved and doing some specialized timber harvests.
you. Why not just leave the woods to its own devices? Why is it better?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and it's important to look at it that way. We could, and here in New York, if you do nothing with land, it'll be covered with trees. If you don't mow your lawn, you're going to get trees growing there. And as I say, you know, all you have to do is look at how farms have gone back to forests, and the same thing will happen to your front lawn. So trees will grow anywhere in New York State, with the exception of maybe the tops of some of the high peaks in the Adirondacks or some natural sand dunes along Lake Ontario or Long Island. But we will be able to get wood products from those. We'll be able to get firewood. We'll be able to get some pulpwood. The trees will sequester some carbon, and so we'll help in climate change, and there'll be animals that'll live in them. So what do we do by managing the woods? We make almost all of those things that we want from the woods better. A logging trail, after the logging is finished, turns into or can turn into a wonderful cross-country ski trail. A timber sale and a harvest will produce revenue for a landowner. And as you know, if you own land in New York State, you got to pay taxes on it. And it's good to be able to have some revenue come in from time to time so that you can offset those taxes. Maybe you don't want to make a lot of money from owning your forest land. Maybe you own it, as most people do, for recreational purposes or part of a home site. But the timber harvesting helps with the financial aspects. Another thing, and of course we've seen this in the Catskills over the decades, is that through keeping the forest in a vigorous growing condition and not letting it get either too dense or too old in large areas, is that we will cut down insect and disease problems. And we've certainly had enough of those here in New York State. And the Catskills have seen its share of gypsy moth infestations. And things like that. So that's another reason for doing some management. Now, that doesn't mean that you go in and you actively cut and harvest every acre. No, there is a good reason to leave groves of trees uncut in some places, because again, that's what people want. And in the Catskills, it's nice because we've got a mix of the forest preserve lands, which in the Catskills were almost all of the forest preserve lands in the Catskills were one time harvested, you know. Now they've grown up, but they will remain forever wild. We've got lands that other private landowners manage for different reasons. You know, don't forget, of all the, we've got about 19 million acres of forest land in New York State. And of that, three-quarters of it is privately owned. And it's owned by 700,000 different people, different families. We used to call it non-industrial private forest lands. Now we call them family forests because that's what they're, a lot of them are owned by. Industry owns some land. Some forest land, not too much in the Catskill area, but in parts of western New York and up on Tug Hill in the Adirondacks, we have some industrial land ownerships. But over 60% of the forests in New York State are owned by private individuals.
So and, if this is our big landowner group, I mean, if more people in the Catskills specifically, but in New York State own the majority of the land, that's primarily it's 50 acres or less, or even smaller acreages in you know, a lot of these areas we're talking about. What are the attitudes of some of these people that are managing this land, and what are they doing in their forest, if anything, that you're seeing?
Yeah. There's... Actually, that was the subject of my PhD dissertation 50-odd years ago. Boy, you name it and people do it or don't do it. It's all over the board. There are a small number of landowners that are very interested and actively going in there and managing their lands. I can think of a landowner over in Otsego County who just put in some really extensive and really nice trails and bridges so that he can go there with his ATVs and then go cross-country skiing on his woodlot. There are some down in the Catskills that have done some very innovative wildlife habitat improvement to either increase the bird cover or, in some cases, the deer. But actually, we got so many deer in lots of places in New York, we don't have to do much for them. And then there's a lot of landowners that, they got the property, and I don't know. I thought it would be fun to own some land. We like to go up there. We have a little cabin, and we're up there in the summertime. And then one day a logger comes around and says, "Hey there, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, you got some timber there. Ought to be cut." And they think, gee, you mean to say we could make some money from this? And sadly, some of them just go ahead and don't get a consulting forester in there. And sometimes the logging doesn't turn out the way they wanted it. But then there are others at that time who say, gee, maybe I ought to get a hold of a consulting forester and see if we can have a sustainable timber harvest.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. We're going to take a break. Up next, I want to ask Dr. Hugh Canham about wood products. But if you're missing the show, it's The Importance of Family Forest in the New York Economy with SUNY ESF's Dr. Hugh Canham.
California stars, I like to sleep out. Weary bones tonight on the bed.
if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. That was California Stars. Has nothing to do with forest whatsoever, John.
Okay.
All right. But tonight, we are talking about the importance of family forest in the New York economy with Dr. Hugh Cannon from the State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry. How's it going? Still there?
Yeah, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Right.
So let's talk about wood products, if you don't mind. What's the significance? I read one of your articles, and it focused on lumber, paper, and furniture. I mean, can you give us some history of that and where it is today?
Yes. If we go back to colonial times, the forests were used for fuel wood and for log cabins, and pretty soon every little town had its own sawmill, and they were cutting a lot of softwoods, pine and spruce and hemlock, for construction lumber and for building homes, and they were using hardwoods for furniture and in home construction also. And as I mentioned earlier, we were exporting a lot of primarily softwood lumber. And if you go back 100 years, 120 years now, you'll find that the lumber production was about 75% softwoods and 25% hardwoods. And now it's switched right around. And now we're producing 75% hardwoods, maple, oak, cherry, basswood, beech, species like that, the deciduous trees, and 25% softwoods, pine, white pine, red spruce, and balsam fir, and hemlock. And right now, we're producing about 455 million board feet of lumber in New York State. Much of that is then exported. In fact, right now, a lot of the hardwood lumber is being exported to China and to Europe. China has become a big consumer of the hardwood lumber, and they make it into furniture and ship it back here. Of course, it wasn't so long ago that we had big furniture plants right here in New York State, out in western New York, in Jamestown. There was three or four big furniture companies, and here in central New York, we had also other furniture companies that were doing quite well. In fact, I'm looking at a sofa that was produced by Hardin Furniture, and when we moved here from our home in Syracuse, we had to get rid of and sell our Hardin dining room furniture.
Why do you think they went out? Why do you think they went out, Hugh?
Yeah. The sawmill business, the lumber production business in New York State is doing okay. It faces the same kinds of problems that any manufacturing sector in New York State faces. High workers' compensation costs, high taxes, and regulations on trucking and Occupational Safety and Health Administration. The furniture industry in New York State is pretty well gone now, and it's gone because of two things. One is competition from Europe, Eastern Europe, and also from Asia. So that's one thing, the competition. But equally important, in fact, even perhaps I would dare say maybe even more important, are changing lifestyles. People move around a lot more now. People's living styles are different. There is not the interest of having heirloom high-end furniture that the once wood furniture that there once was. You can go to any one of a number of the big box retail stores and get yourself a nice TV cabinet that was either you bring it home and assemble it yourself, and it's probably a mix of some composites and maybe some solid pieces of wood, but it's probably been made in either Eastern Europe or China, and it's not the same as a piece of heirloom furniture that was made by Jamestown Sterling or Pennsylvania House or one of those big companies or Hardin. So yeah. Changing lifestyles. There's been... so those are the two things that have led to the demise of the furniture industry. But here in New York, you know, we've still got a lot of smaller firms. In fact, for a number of years, the Watershed Ag Council in the Catskills there was helping by making grants. We made some small grants. I was on the committee. Grants to small wood-using industries that may have hired 2 to 5, maybe up to 10 people that turned out specialty custom furniture items. I mean, what the heck? We're sitting right on the doorstep of the one of the biggest markets in the world, with New York City right there. And so these small cabinet manufacturers and small furniture manufacturers and furniture companies are turning out specialty items. We also have in New York, in the New York metropolitan area, quite a few small firms. They may buy their wood from here, or they may not. A big consumer of wood in the New York City is Steinway Piano. Of course, they use all kinds of different kinds of wood, but there they are located there. Paper production was another one that was big in New York State. And again, we go back to the late 1800s, and New York was a leading producer of paper through the pulpwood that was harvested from New York State. First of all, that again started out to be primarily softwood, spruce, and fir, and then actually largely through research done by the College of Forestry in Syracuse in the 1960s, that was turned around, and all of a sudden hardwoods were in demand for making paper. And again, the paper industry, well, in the 1930s, we had about 30 paper mills here in New York State. By the mid-1960s, there were 18 mills. Now there's two paper mills in New York State.
Do you know if...
International Paper has a mill at Ticonderoga, and Finch Prine has one at Glens Falls.
Do you know, despite there being fewer mills, pulp paper mills, is the output less or more?
The output is less. The output is less than it was 50 years ago. But there's these two mills are huge modern mills. And Finch Prine, for example, in Glens Falls, they will import hemlock. They will bring in hemlock all the way from western Maine, and produce paper out of it.
Western Maine?
Yeah, I know. That's quite a haul, isn't it?
Can they take some from the Catskills, or?
Yep. Oh yeah. They'll take it from there.
Man, this doesn't seem like there's a starving market for it, though. Is that not true? I mean, it doesn't seem like anybody's selling pulpwood products out of the Catskill Mountains.
No. A lot of the hemlock that could go into pulp, a lot of the logging contractors are finding it's just as profitable to ship the hemlock logs to Canada. That was until this coronavirus and a few other things have soured some of the export markets. But, yeah, took care of a logging job about, 10 years ago, I guess it was now. And all the hemlock, it was a mixed sale of hardwoods and softwoods. But all the hemlock did not go to the sawmill of the company that bought it, that bought the bid on the job. All the hemlock was shipped up to Canada.
No kidding. What about wood chips? What's the front on wood chips?
Oh, that's no pun intended. That's the hot new market. It turns out that chips are a big product right now, both hardwood and softwood chips. Some of it is from sawmill residues, things that 50 years ago the sawmills would just burn in their boilers to produce energy. They're now chipping into chips and shipping off for using in biomass for heating, or else turning the hardwood chips and softwood chips into paper. Most of that is occurring out of the manufacturing of it is occurring out of the state, but we're seeing a rise in the production of chips here. Oh yeah.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is the importance of family forests in the New York economy with SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry's Dr. Hugh Canham. Hugh, how significant is the forest-based or wood products manufacturing in New York State?
Yes. It ranks I got to remember what I wrote. it ranks sixth in manufacturing output and also sixth in employment. Now, what does that mean? Well, the big sectors in manufacturing in New York State, number one, in terms of employment, number one is fabricated metal products. Number two is food products. Number three is computer and electronics. Four is machinery. Five is chemical products. And six is forest products. The fabricated metal, the leading sector, employs statewide 12% of the population. Forest products employs 9%. And that's made up of people that work in the woods, people that work in the sawmills, people that work in paper manufacturing and converting, and people that work in the secondary industries making wood products. In terms of value of shipments, forest products ships $10 billion dollars of products a year, and that accounts for 7% of all manufacturing products in New York State. And again, chemical products is the highest, and then food products, machinery, electronics, metal products, and then forest products. So when you think about New York and how diverse the manufacturing is, for forest products to rank number six in employment and in value of shipments, it's pretty significant. In the forest products sector in New York State, there's 34,000 people employed there. In the Catskill region, it's, I don't know if I have it, don't have it broken out for the Catskill region, but that 34 is spread across the state.
Now, is this industry in New York State growing, stable, declining? And what are the vulnerabilities you see of this forest products industry?
The value of the shipments that it's made for the past 20 years have remained relatively stable. I'm looking at a graph here, and in terms of wood products and paper and allied products, it's risen a little bit, and in furniture and fixtures, it's declined a little bit. In terms of employment, the wood product sector has remained relatively stable. Paper and allied products and furniture have declined. The sector, the wood manufacturing sectors in New York, as I said earlier, are subjected to all of the problems that manufacturing in New York State has. And also, though, can take advantage of all of those things. A little survey that was done by Empire State Forest Products Association found that in this coronavirus pandemic, with the cutback in economic activity, a lot of the wood-using firms here in New York State have been able to take advantage of payroll protection and other kinds of programs to keep their employees on.
Have you ever studied how New York State compares within this industry to other states or no?
Yes. And one of the problems is each state has its own ups and downs and has some unique characteristics. New York is similar to New England in some ways and similar to the Lake States in other ways, Wisconsin, Minnesota, or Michigan. We compare favorably. We compare favorably. I don't have the figures right at my fingertips. We've had some administrations in New York State. Some of our state legislators and legislatures have not understood the forest products industry, and we've had some setbacks in terms of not getting some legislation passed that they've been able to get through in other states. But I think now it looks as though we're beginning to get some recognition of the importance of the forestry sector here in New York. The governor's budget has usually funded something called the Wood Products Development Council. We're seeing interest in this in climate change. I understand at the last meeting of the climate change committee here in New York State that how the forests can help ameliorate climate was the main topic and took up most of the discussion. What can we do to improve the way forests sequester carbon and help to keep climate change down? And as you know, the governor is pushing very strongly now to have New York become a leader in doing whatever we can to ameliorate climate change.
So what are, how would this affect private forest landowners, do you think?
Well, again, yeah, who is it that ultimately controls the what happens on the forest lands? It's a private landowner.
Right.
Because they own, out of the 18 million acres of forest land in New York State, by the way, that's about 1 acre of forest for each of the 19 million people we have living in New York State. But anyway, the private landowners control almost 70% of the, 75% when you add in industry. But the non-industrial private forest landowners, they own 60% of the forest land. They own more than that in the Catskills and in across central New York. There, it's all private landowners. As you drive down the Hudson Valley and you look up to the hills, what you see mainly is private land. And so if you want to do something with the forest, you got to get to the private landowner. Either give them some incentive, give them some information. Regulating them is not going to, we hope, we don't have to resort to that. But they're the key to getting anything done. There's talk right now of seeing if we can make it feasible somehow for landowners who own forest land to be paid for the carbon that they are sequestering in their trees. It's been done on large industrial ownerships in the South and in the West, and Pennsylvania is doing a little pilot project now to try it out there to see if there's some way we can work out feasible payment schedules. These payments come then from like cap and trade programs, where a company that's producing something, electric power, and they're producing carbon, then they pay a carbon tax on that, and the landowners who are sequestering carbon get reimbursed.
Hugh, we have the state. We've talked about the state and the federal level. What's something on the local level, since New York State's a home rule state and each town has its ordinances? Some are favorable, some are not, towards private forest landowners. The taxes are high in some areas and low in others. What's something towns could do to help out the forest within their town?
Well, I think probably the most important thing, in fact, is to have someone on the town board and on the planning board and on the zoning board of appeals that knows something about forests, to be there and to raise the flag and say, hey, wait a minute, we got to think about this. That happens more with agriculture, because agriculture tends to be more visible. Although we're seeing in some of these suburbanizing towns that even agriculture needs a good, strong spokesperson. So that's one thing they can do. The second thing is not pass ordinances that eliminate any kind of timber harvesting. I can understand where they don't want to have stream banks eroded and they want to follow best management practices. That would be a forward-looking law, but not to have rural zoning. That gets to be pretty sticky, and I say that. I was chairman of the zoning board in the town of Salina, where I used to live in Syracuse. I was chairman of the zoning board for about 15 years. Another thing towns can do is to work with local timber harvesters and encourage them to be careful about how they go across stream crossings, what about road cuts, load limits during the mud season. But instead of just shutting them down, work with them proactively and recognize that the forest products industry can help them out and help the town grow just as agriculture could. There's talk about a right to practice forestry law. You know, we have right to farm laws in New York State. There is a right to farm law. It's up to the local town to see if they want to adopt it, and some towns have. It gets to be difficult, though.
Yeah.
I think organizations like the Catskill Forest Association and New York Forest Owners Association need to get up close and in person with their local and state legislators. One final thought on this. A good friend of mine who was secretary of the New York State Senate for many years, he used to say to me, "Hugh, you know, it's not how well you know your legislator. It's how well your senator or assembly person or town board member knows you."
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the forestry interests, and you're absolutely right. We are a home rule state. It comes down to you invite your town board members to go on a forestry, on a woods walk. I know Catskill Forest Association has woods walks. New York Forest Owners Association has them. Let's get these legislators out there and show them what's happening in the woods.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. We've been speaking to Dr. Hugh Cannon from SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry about the importance of family forests in the New York economy. Hugh, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. May the forest be with us.
We'll try. All right. Take care. Thank you again.
Okay.
Bye. Yeah, if you just missed it, that was Dr. Hugh Cannon from SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry. And next week we'll have Mr. Gary Mead, talk about a different Catskills tree, and that's all we have on From the Forest. See you next week.
Good night, everyone.
And he wondered how it happened that he ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at the games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.